Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's the Power of Poetics, the DC Poetry Project's open mic call-in show.
My name is Michael Anthony Ingram, and I would like to welcome you to the Power of Poetics. I'm the host of the show, as well as the executive director of the DC Poetry Project. Each week, we will delve into issues through poetry and spoken word that may make some of us feel uneasy, angry, or frustrated. The exploration of these issues may also make us feel heard, powerful, joyful, and celebratory. There are no rights or wrongs in poetry. Everyone has his or her story to share. The goal of our exercise of this show is respect. No one's view is better than another, but please note that the opinions expressed are solely those of the author or writer of the works recited tonight and do not necessarily reflect the views of the DC Poetry Project. Again, my name is Michael Anthony Ingram, and I'd like to say welcome to all of our listeners from around the world. We enjoy bringing this program to you, and hopefully over the course of the next several months, we build a really nice following and have people calling in from all over in terms of different places. If you'd like to call in tonight, the call-in number is 646-716-8754. The theme for tonight's program is the last frontier, the role of poetry in protest. We have with us a very special guest. He's a community activist. His name is Alex Getacho, and I'd like to bring him on. Alex, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, sir. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Again, the theme for the show is The Last Frontier, the Role of Poetry in Protest. You know, Alex, I found a statement by a person online. The person's name is YSH Cabana. And Mr. or Ms. Cabana stated that protest poetry is poetry that strives to undermine established values and ideals, particularly those associated with the government and other bodies of authority. Protest poetry often aims to shock readers into political action by discussing taboo subject matters, using unconventional and often profane language, criticizing popular beliefs, and shunning formal poetic conventions. Now, before I ask you a question about this particular topic, we've got some callers. I'd like to bring them online, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Good evening, sir.
Hey. Hello?
Hello, Gary. Is this you from Alabama?
This is I.
Hello, Gary. Good evening, sir. How are you tonight?
I'm good. Yourself?
Welcome back to the... I'm fantastic. Welcome back to the DC Poetry Project's new renamed, rechristened show, The Power of Poetics. And I have one more person calling in. Hold on 1 second. Good evening. Area code 571.
Hello, this is Anastasia.
Hello, Anastasia. How are you?
Wonderful. How are you?
Great. Welcome to our new show, The Power of Poetics. We have with us Alex Getacho, who's our guest speaker, the person who's sharing tonight in terms of the power of poetics, in terms of the last frontier in terms of poetry. So what I wanted Mr. Gattacho to do is to kind of comment on the statement that I made about protest poetry, and then we'll move into actual works.
Yes, absolutely. I think that there's a number of elements in this statement by the person that you cited, which are, I think, are pretty accurate. The idea of shocking readers into political action by discussing things that people are not normally comfortable with. I believe the term was taboo. But this is very, very important, because what poets tend to do when they're at their best is they take subjects that people think they're familiar with and introduce them in a way that is shockingly transfigures the subjects. And in a certain sense, if one is creative, one can do this in a productive way. Now, we all know that there are different ways to shock people. At risk of being a little profane myself, you can walk up and flash somebody and show them things they're not supposed to see, and they might be shocked. But the question you got to ask is, what's the point? Now, a good poet knows how to do this, and so I would tend to agree. You do have to. You cannot just go along to get along. And I would say that the idea that it also seems to, the quote also seems to address, is something that I'm a very big believer in. And I would take it even further, that often what people, when people think about protest, they often think of the idea that somebody should, that we're just essentially complaining, right? I'm not going to, I mean, for purposes of your program, I won't give any names, but I can all think right, of a right, few right. folks that get on, that get in front of the microphone, and we see them a lot. And they're normally complaining about things, but they never organize their audience the way that a poet would, by introducing a principle. Protest, good protest, is not just complaining about things that happen to us because they're things that affect us, although that's an important part of it. Protest of a profound nature is something which deals with principles, something where we are organizing ourselves to address the fact that there are principles that are being ignored or being crushed by a certain approach or policy, by the culture that we're in, or by the policies of the government that affect the society that we're in. So basically there are principles, and this is important, because as poets and as citizens, we have to set ourselves above. So what makes you any better than the people you're protesting? There's been a lot of history, and one of my favorite poets, Shakespeare, talks about this in his wonderful play that I didn't understand until I was deep into my adulthood, is Julius Caesar. He shows us that just because you're replacing a tyrant doesn't mean you're better. You might even be worse. So the thing that sets us apart is not just that we're protesting things we don't like, but that there are higher principles engaged. So I will stop there and we can have a discussion.
All right, thank you. I mean, that was a beautiful explanation. Anastasia, Gary, what are you thinking about protest? Why should we protest? Your thoughts.
Well, I think we should protest because whatever the subject matter, especially if it's sensitive to one group of people, whether it be a black or white issue or a gender issue or gay versus straight or whatever, but I think the sole purpose is to keep a dialogue, keep the dialogue about the subject going, and it's also the first protest and help educate those that don't lack the knowledge or haven't gave time to take the time to gain the insight or what their people are protesting about. So when people are protesting, that brings a certain sense of curiosity that others may not have been aware of, and make them go investigate by either start talking to others or asking questions, and then they can become knowledgeable, and then in the process they become learning something about the people that are protesting or what they're protesting about, and in the process of learning, they can become enlightening. You know, and then that helps, because I think one of the greatest divides of a people is the lack of knowledge or the lack of of not knowing the cultures or understanding other people.
Right. And sometimes I just believe that, well, I was going to say sometimes I believe also it's the lack of knowledge and truly in terms of understanding self in relation to the world and trying to figure out where you fit and if you fit or should you fit. I mean, to me, that's a form of protest too, trying to wrestle with self in relation to the world.
Yeah, I agree with that also. Yeah, and like I said, and in the process, it may strike awareness to teach somebody about, you know, to evaluate their self. You know, why do I oppose these people? Why am I, you know, why I feel indifferent toward their, what they're standing for? So you're right. You know, I agree. But protest is, it's a very useful tool to help educate and enlighten and keep to teach others about other people and ourselves. So I think it's very useful and productive.
Yeah. What, while we're okay, please, Alex.
I'm sorry. Say, I couldn't hear that. I'm sorry.
What I just said?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I hadn't had an opportunity to formulate a thought, but what I was thinking is that when we talk about poetry being the last frontier, why would it be viewed as the last frontier, good people, in terms of freedom of speech, way of being? Why is poetry then so very important? Maybe it's already been answered, but I guess I want to hear it again from any one of you. Why is it so important?
Well, let me just say, and I would love to hear whatever the people have to say, is the fact that what the gentleman who spoke just before you brought up, and what you guys have brought, what you just said, get at something that made me think of the civil rights movement, of understanding yourself and awakening people. Now, the issue, it's not a coincidence that Martin Luther King was a great student of philosophy and poetry. And he would often quote the great poets in his speeches and often address things in a way that synthesized different elements and factors that people didn't understand played into what they were looking at. And for example, speaking of understanding yourself, look, if it weren't for this deep, in fact, Martin Luther King in an interview one time said something that surprised a lot of people. He was asked that if you had to pick any book, if you were on an island by yourself and you had to pick any book to take with you and it was not the Bible, which one would you take? And he said, Plato's Republic. Now, I'm somebody who has looked at this. And it's basically poetry in a rigorous sense, because what it does do is it challenges you to think about how you organize society to fit what we know is the real nature of people and how do you foster creativity. So I say all of that to say, when the civil rights movement was fighting up, was running up against the most disgusting, evil, physical attacks, etc., one of the things that they could do, which their enemies could not do, is understand the reaction they would get. Their enemies had so great a lack of understanding of themselves that Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement, by taking the approach they did, using the timing they used, were able to cause the enemy to react in a way that their enemies themselves didn't understand they would be doing. So what happened is they were able to essentially predict the reactions, people on the other side, of the brutality, et cetera, but in a way that was efficient. And this forced the entire society to look at this. This was important. This is how you conduct warfare, and this is also how you write great poetry, is you introduce subjects that challenge the audience to think about things and reflect on their own minds in a way they otherwise would not. So obviously we're talking about two different things, political, proactive, organizing, but and then on the other hand, writing a poem. But both deal with the mind and organizing, you know, the elements that the mind has to take in. But anyway, this is an area that inspires me, so I'll stop there.
Well, I just want to say that they both deal with the mind, but they also deal with the heart as well. I mean,
absolutely.
You've got to have a strong heart powerful heart to step out there in front of others and speak your truth, whatever that is.
And you've got to know yourself.
And you've got to know yourself. What I'd like us to do is take just a short little break, and there's some other callers. And if you'd like to call in, the number is 646-716-8754. And when we come back, we'll come back with some good poetry. So hold on to your seats. Good evening. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. Welcome to the Power of Poetics. I think we finally are on a roll now. I've settled into my seat as the host. It's been a while since I've been in this chair, so it's good to be back, and it's great to have our guests with us, community activists Alex Gattajo, Anastasia, beautiful Anastasia, Mr. Gary Malone, and we've got one more person who's attempting to sign in, so hold on 1 second. Good evening. Area code 301.
Hi, this is Sophia.
Hello, Sophia. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Welcome to the Power of Poetics, and we look forward to hearing your voice tonight. We're discussing the role of poetry in protest. We've discussed how important it is to step out there, to share your truth, whatever that is, that there are no rights or no wrongs, and sometimes it's just really good to voice your concerns. So who'd like to go first in terms of sharing a piece of poetry? Anyone? Anybody have anything?
Did somebody volunteer just now? I heard a lady's voice.
I'll go first.
Well, please, thank you, Gary. I appreciate that, sir.
All right. This piece is entitled Judge If You Must. There shall be order in these proceedings, Your Honor. Well, before I proceed, what do you see when you look at me? Obviously, the color of my skin, then immediately an imminent threat. Well, I'm just as threatened at the lack of understanding standing between two different cultures, when we were both cultured out of the same dish with the same DNA, dirt. Yet you hose me down and treat me as if I'm mud. See me, and immediately you want to judge and be the grand jury without even attempting to consider my history. Years of slavery fed into a machine of hatred and ignorance. Through dark eyes, you see a man draped in darkness hiding behind light. Yet you ignore the white stars in my red blood and the blue stripes that you put on my black back. Because of conflict and confusion, you refuse to give me a blood transfusion to help us live like brothers from the same mother, Eve. But you want to judge and treat me like those bloodthirsty hounds that chased my fugitive ancestors, brought out of freedom land, running north to the land of the free, only to be caught, not given a fire trial, lynched and hung like a leaf from the branch of a please don't involve me in this atrocity tree. Are we not all branches from Jehovah's only begotten tree? And still, you want to judge me? Yes, I'm black and appalled, terrified that an arrested terrorist get better treatment in our judicial system. I said be quiet, there should be order in this court. Sit down, poet, before I put you in contempt. Your Honor, wait. Let me straighten my face so I can get this point straight. Sir, you want me to muzzle my contempt, silence my rebellion, quiet my question, and contain my curiosity? Well, excuse me, are you trying to play with my mind, Mr. Lumosity? Please don't set me off like Jada and Latifah. Did you pull this trigger, Mr. Gravedigger? We watched as you buried a dreamer, assassinated a revolutionary, executed an activist, slain a visionary, imprisoned a future president, and crucified a messenger. Well, spread this message. Martin, Malcolm, Marcus, Megan, Mandela, I even cry out to the resurrected Messiah before I sit down and be quiet. and let these blue hooded officers plot a black generation demise. I said, rest in peace, Trayvon, Michael, Sean, Eric, Tamir, Troy, James, Emmett, and the rest of my brothers and sisters that's tragically victimized for being unfairly judged for looking like me. And to those falsely judged and then wrongly incarcerated, keep your head up, for one day you too will be free. So what do you see when you see me? I tell you, a poet on fire, an angry American citizen, a passionate preacher, a knowledgeable teacher, a fighter and a warrior, I'm more than a conqueror. I'm a chosen child of the Most High Almighty. So you slam your damn gravel whilst I grovel. But in God I trust. Now you go ahead, judge prejudice, and you judge if you must.
That was powerful. Man.
Thank you, brother.
Talk about your inspiration, my friend. Talk about your inspiration, as we always do.
Well, that piece was obviously inspired by the recent events that was concerning the black men that I named and that mentioned in that piece, and also when I was watching the protesters when they were standing and protesting and demonstrating and talking about Black Lives Matter, I just envisioned the judge, the prejudice being put on trial. And so I just wrote that from a perspective that, you know, from that perspective that, okay, well, this is what really the root cause of this is prejudice and bigotry. So I'm going to, that's the way I presented it, that from that judge, that's what prejudice do. It prejudges others without even getting a chance to know them. So I just come from that perspective, and that's how I wrote the poem.
As always, always right on time. Last night I had an opportunity to attend a Black Lives Matters event, and it's primarily for young kids, and they were on the microphone sharing their poetry about their lives in terms of how they view the police and how they view their own way of being as being African-American children. And it was really, really powerful. And it wasn't just African-American children. It was just children actually from all races discussing why we should all come together as one and how difficult that is in terms of prejudice and racism and the causes of it. And it was a very, very powerful program. So I was glad I had an opportunity to participate. Who'd like to share another piece?
Well, I would like to share something because I do think that it's not something that I wrote. I mean, as you know, I have written things, but I wanted to share something by Paul Lawrence Dunbar, which is not as explicitly political as our brother's work that we just heard, but it's something. And I also just wanted to mention, if I may, that the DC Poetry Project that you lead up, Brother Michael, is something to me that's been inspiring. With your help and the Poets on the Green Line, I've kind of gotten more and more engaged in writing. And I just would like to acknowledge the fact that it itself, the kind of work that you're doing itself is poetry, because what you're doing is you're creating the environment where people, after a long day's work, given whatever they're doing in their walk of life, you're creating the environment where people can get synergy and feel comfortable enough to share the deepest and most meaningful things. So I just wanted to thank you because you given me the opportunity to express some of the things I really most enjoy through the writing and the poetry. But I just wanted to point that out because that is part of politics. Real political leadership, in my view, is giving people a voice and increasing their power to convey ideas by allowing them to have the habit of the social dynamics, you know, that we have with the DC Poetry Project. Thank you again. So with that said, the poem I wanted to share is it's called When Melindy Sings by Paul Lawrence Dunbar. And it goes as follows. Go away and quit that noise, Miss Lucy. Put that music book away. What's the use to keep on trying? If you practice till you're gray, you can't start no notes a-flying like the ones that rasp and ring, from the kitchen to the big woods when Melindy sings. You ain't got the natural organs for to make the sound come right. You ain't got the tunes and twistings for to make it sweet and light. Tell you one thing now, Miss Lucy, and I'm telling you for truth, when it comes to round right singing, ain't no easy thing to do. Excuse me. Lost my place. But what's... You ain't got the natural organ for to make the sound come right. You ain't got the tunes and twists for to make it sweet and light. I'll tell you one thing now, Miss Lucy, and I'm telling you for true. When it comes to round right singing, ain't no easy thing to do. Easy enough for folks to holler, looking at the lines and dots, when there ain't no one can sense it, and the tune comes in spots. But for real melodious music, such as strikes your heart and cling, just you stand and listen with me when Melindy sings. Ain't you never heard Melindy? Bless your soul, take up the cross. Look here, ain't you joking, honey? You don't know what you lost. You ought to hear that girl a-wobbling. Robins, larks, and all them things hush their mouths and hide their faces when Melindy sings. Fiddling man just stops his fiddling, lay his fiddle on the shelf. Mockingbird quit trying to whistle because he just so shamed himself. Folks are playing on the banjo, drops their fingers on the strings. Bless your soul. Forgets to move them when Melindy sings. She just spreads her mouth and hollers, come to Jesus. Till you hear sinners trembling, steps and voices, timid like a drawing near. Then she tunes to Rock of Ages. Simply to the cross she clings, and you feel your tears are dropping when Melindy sings. Who that says that humble praises with the master never counts? Hush your mouth, I hear that music as it rises up and mounts, floating by the hills and valleys, way above this burying sod, as it makes its way in glory to the very gates of God. Oh, it's sweeter than the music of an educated band, and it's dearer than the battle song of triumph in the land. It seems holier than evening when the solemn church bell rings, as I sit and calmly listen when Melindy sings. Tyler, stop that barking, hear me? Mandy, make that child keep still. Don't you hear the echoes calling from the valleys to the hill? Let me listen, I can hear it, through the brush of angels' wings, soft and sweet. Swing low, sweet chariot, as Melindy sings. Finished.
That was
all
great.
Lord done for. That really was.
He's one of my favorites. He's an amazing guy.
Yes. I don't know, tonight, just kind of listening to what we've heard so far, just sends a sense of, I guess, sense of sadness through my bones. You want to call it that, just thinking about life and things that people have had to endure just to breathe, just to be. And they're saying, I can't breathe. And sometimes it feels that way, that you can't breathe and that you do need to stand up. Who'd like to go next? Well, until someone is ready, let's take a little break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Power of Poetics. My name is Michael Ingram. I am your host, and we're here with a number of celebrated poets and community activists as we talk about the last frontier, the role of poetry in protest. Any one of our guests would like to share a piece?
I have a quick question, Brother Michael.
Yes, sir.
At some point, I actually would like to ask people a question, and but I won't. I will wait for you. I will defer to you for the moment. But at some point, I would like to ask people here a question about your theme.
About say that one more time.
Yeah, I would like to ask a question about your concept of poetry as a final frontier.
Okay. All right. All right. We can do that. Would someone like to share a piece before we move into that part of the program?
Sure, I'll share a piece.
Oh, thank you. All
this
right.
This is Sophia.
Sophia.
Hi. This piece is called Definition. Why do you define me? Why do you define what I am worth, what I mean to this earth? Why do you define me? Why are you the reason for my ups, my downs, my merry-go-rounds, my smiles and my frowns? Why do you define me? From the things that I eat to the way that I speak, to what's real and what's fake, to how much money I make, why do you define me? My lips and my eyes, my shape and my size, all done up to win your prize, and then I realize why you do define me. You know why? Because I let you.
Oh, wow.
So,
because I let
the reason why.
Oh, all right, all right. Tell us more. That's beautiful.
The reason why I guess I read that piece as it defines to freedom and protest is because you can only, people can only oppress you if you allow them to. I feel like if you stand up and you say no and you overcome and you push past, there's always a way. You just have to make a way. And so it's about really tapping into your own power and releasing the shackles of what other people think and their expectations of you and going beyond that.
Tapping into your own power. Is that an easy process to people, to tap into your own power?
I don't know about other people, but no. I don't believe that.
Okay.
Absolutely not. I mean, you really basically, there's certain things about myself I'm only beginning to directly kind of reflect on in the recent years, and I don't mind I don't mind sharing my age. I'm about to turn 40 in the next week or so, and just in the last 5 years, I found myself creating giving myself the opportunity to. So it's really hard because you're dealing with habits that you learn from outside your home, inside your home, and also things that have been built up for centuries. So really becoming, knowing yourself is one of the most difficult things and has to be voluntary.
Right. Wow. I'd like to recite a piece. It's not one of my own, but it's one that I found that focuses on protest. And it's called In Protest. When you shake your head while I'm speaking, what I know is the truth. I suppress a scream. I can feel a protest rising in my throat, but I've learned to smother it with a pillow and slowly push in a knife to quiet my convictions to avoid a follow-up sit-down written-out reprimand. I think back to times when I said to myself, I love what I'm doing. I do this for free. I'll do this for the rest of my life. When we speak at each other, sometimes in gently increasing volume and a sharpened tone, raising our fingers to note that we'd like a chance to speak again, we're not listening. We're just speaking. We're not in a dialogue, but two monologues. You remind us very often that this is not a democracy. And that if we don't fit in here, we should leave, and my chest tightens when I hear it. Having to leave would mean starting over with devils I don't know. Demons I don't care about. Daemons I don't run anymore. You removed them from my care, and it was the greatest balance to me in this work of service and bits, and I have always felt calm in this place until recently. And that was written by John Lemesney.
Hmm.
I have always felt safe in this place or calm in this place until recently. Because sometimes you don't really know who's around you and whether they stand for you or whether they're against you.
Hmm.
And that's the hardest part sometimes for me personally.
That's an amazing concept. It's actually something that you struck at the core of something I was thinking about. But when I was mentioning the kind of facilitation provided at the DC Poetry Project meetings and why I appreciate it so much, because it's about listening and encouraging and not trying to stand over people. And I mean, I was leading leadership development workshops recently, and one of the things that came up by a gentleman, Stephen Covey's work, he focuses on this concept of listening, that most people listen with the intention to reply, but not really to understand. And this is one of the biggest problems we have in our society. And, it's one of the reasons I was happy to hang out with the kind of stuff that, you know, the kind of stuff that goes on with DCPP. It really is one of the things I spend so much time thinking about. And I encourage all the young people I work with that you got to, number one, surround yourself with people who are interested in important things and have ambitions to do important things, but also listen. Most people don't do that.
I agree with that. All right, would someone else like to share? Gary, do you have another one, my friend?
I do.
Please. All right, fantastic.
This piece is called Why Dream. America continent needs a shot of no-dose to wake up in history that seemed frozen in the ice-cold layers of the ozone. How soon we forgot and allowed time to rob us of the inspirational impact of the dream. The landscape has changed. The signs are gone, whites and colors only. Only the Jim Crow mentality has shifted from white hoods to blue uniforms and business suits and ties. Politicians suited to keep oppression tied to the poor working middle class. A class is in recess playing hooky on some of their responsibilities, obligations, and priorities. And for some American underprivileged citizens, the dream is no longer a priority. Why haven't the dream come true? Have we lost the resolve to dream bigger dreams? Have we not the faith to pray for unselfish things? Has the community and church become a place of complacency? Has contentment been traded with the unfinished business of Malcolm X, Fannie Lou Hamer, Mary Evans, Fred Shuttleworth? Have we forgotten the true value of our worth? Have we forgot about two important tragic Sundays that prepared the course of a major movement? On Sunday, September 15, 1963, as an act of white supremacist terrorism, the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama was bombed. Please let us not forget Annie Mae Collins, Cynthia Wesley, Kara Robertson, and Denise McNair. Have we reached our goals marching from Selma to Montgomery? Are today's protesters backtracking on the same beaten down paths trodden on by protesters in the 60s? On Bloody Sunday, March 7, 1965, black feet participated in civil disobedience, ironically walked on Edmund Pettus, a Confederate general and a former KKK Grand Wizard, a bridge segregating hatred and hope, injustice and justice, ignorant and truth, further separating Pharaoh's plantation and Moses' promised land, to be met with tear gas, baton big as baseball bats, bull whips and horses. Under the order of Sheriff Jim Clark, millions watched as bigotry trampled on a living constitution. And in the aftermath, black and white faces, sullen in horror and swollen in terror, suffered under the Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual punishment. John Lewis, along with other Dallas County residents residing in southern Alabama, Selma and Marion, would never forget about what happened Thursday, February 18, 1965, to Mr. Jimmie Lee Jackson. Have we simply forgotten dream only to settle to live in a nightmare? If so, why dream? No longer are we for the National Association for the Advancement of not just colored people, but all people. Then why dream? Are we comfortable taking a nap on a bed of affliction when more garden parks are needed to document the horrible tragedies occurring in our parks? Look at what happened to 12-year-old Tamir in Cleveland. Least we forget about what happened Sunday, August 28, 1955, to 14-year-old Emmett Till. Put your hands up for Sean Bell, Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, James Shaney, Andrew Goodman, and Michael Schwarner. And then tell me, who shall finish dreaming their dreams? While they're planting more trees to honor victims of social injustice in Washington, D.C. National Park, a noble gesture. However, we need more Rosa Parks to stand in protest like she did Thursday, December 1st, 1955. Until America lives up to its creed that all men are created equal. Have we forgot the blood and the sweat and the tears it took to pass the Voting Rights Act in 1965? Unlike in the brilliant movie Selma, those people were not actors or extras, but yet they was extra extraordinary for being so brave to risk their lives. So do we continue on in an uninterested fashion in our voting participating performances, especially in the midterm election, and sleep snoring as a rebellious Republican tear away at our fallen hero's legacy? Then why dream? The dream was written in black ink on white paper, broadcast through black and white lens to black and whites alike. Yet like Crayola crayon, there's a color for every color to color it. Now answer this question out loud if you want to. When asked, why haven't the dream come true? Do you remove the sleep from your eyes and reply, what dream? Well, do you? No. Then are you actually part of making the dream come true? Or are you still asleep and just dreaming? But don't forget to wake up, my people. For one day, the dream may need you.
That's really nice.
Wow.
You wrote this?
Yes, I'm still here.
Brother, you wrote it?
Yes, I did. I wrote it. I performed it two Sundays ago at a MLK Black History event.
Oh, that's really great.
I'm sure that went over well. You're extremely, extremely talented, Gary. Extremely talented.
Oh, well, thank you.
All of our
thank artists. Thank you. For the most part, I write all my poetry. I rarely ever share. I read a lot of other people, but I rarely ever, perform other people's pieces. But now, for the most part, I write all of my pieces. But thank you though. And it did went over real well. They was very quiet for a moment. You know, I guess the impact of the question at the end might have caught them off guard. But and then that they received it real well.
That's great.
Well, speaking of a question, I think Alex, you had a question for the group.
Yes, actually, I just wanted to comment the thing that you asked and kind of reemphasize. I wanted to underline the point you were making about poetry being the final frontier, because when you and I first spoke of this, one of the things that came to my mind was one of my favorite poets, Percy Shelley. He wrote something which was profound, had a profound effect on me and my political outlook. This is a work called In Defense of Poetry. In here, he says something about poets, which catches a lot of people by surprise. He calls poets the unacknowledged legislators of humanity, the unacknowledged legislators of mankind. And I thought about this. Number one, first of all, it hasn't been very long. Mankind has been around a long time, and most people don't realize that, before a couple hundred years ago, if you had a great idea and were a creative genius, unless you were born into a certain bloodline, you can't just run and become an officer or a member of parliament run for office or advocate for anything. And even the ones who were in office often couldn't advocate for anything of substance. So often what you saw was people like Shakespeare, and not very many, because there were a lot of poets and people who wrote who were kind of like minstrels or people working for the aristocracy. But a lot of the best ones ended up putting themselves willing to take risks for their ideas and their principles. Some of the people I'm thinking of, Schiller, Keith, they died young. Schiller was on the run, and others, you know, were on the run for significant parts of their lives because, in the case of Friedrich Schiller and Shelley, who died under suspicious circumstances, they were doing things and organizing, not just protesting, but they were organizing people and inspiring them to think about what is the nature of humanity, and not in literal ways, but through beauty and through uplifting them and helping them go through a playful path towards self-discovery. Now, getting back to this idea of man as the poets are the unacknowledged legislators of humanity, I wanted to ask people, why do you think this is not as well understood today? Why do people have trouble seeing that art has this responsibility to uplift and to impact?
Hey, that's a fantastic question. Would anyone like to tackle it first?
So if I could ask a clarifying question about your question, just so I make sure that I understand, it being about art and or artists having this responsibility to uplift mankind with their art, is that the question?
Yeah, yes, in part. And I would let me clarify my question in a different way. I'm also you can also look at it this way, that when Percy Shelley talks about this faculty that poets have that enables them to awaken something in people by
mm-hmm.
giving them and he says that there's a faculty that makes them poets. There's the ability to synthesize thoughts and to comprehend things. Now, he says this is a faculty that poets share with other people who are creative, but he calls it a poetic faculty. So what I'm saying, the question I'm asking is, what is it about our current culture that makes it hard for people to see this? Why is it not as readily understood? That's one question. And the other question I would ask, let me just ask a more fundamental question. You can answer both or either one. Is it clear why Percy Shelley says this, that poets are the unacknowledged legislators of mankind because of the impact they can make with their work? Why are they important for politics? Because it doesn't necessarily mean that they're writing poems that are explicitly political, right? Like, you could put it into a rhyme that you should vote for this guy or don't vote for that guy or support this idea. But even when they're doing something which is just writing good poetry, what is it about that that enhances the political process? Is that clear?
Yes, it's clear to me.
I believe so.
I guess. Well, I was just going to throw this in. Why? Because who cares? Who cares what poets think? I mean, the art and craft of poetry, I'm just talking out loud. This is just my thoughts here on this topic, are not viewed as being scientific. You can't
mm-hmm.
quantify. You can't quantify words. You could talk about it from a qualitative perspective, but you can't quantify the words. So why should anybody care? Is somebody just blowing hot air?
Absolutely.
I mean,
in fact, Let me throw this in there. Albert Einstein said that his creativity in science came from his relationship to music, which in essence is poetry. Why is that? Why does creativity and the ability to see how things connect in a way that's unique and real, why is that important to society? and why is that missing?
So, I cut you off. I'm so sorry.
No problem. No, that's it.
No, I was talking to Ms. Stewart. I cut you off, I believe.
Oh, sorry. No, I mean, I think the larger question about creativity, I think people don't understand creativity. And so if you don't really truly understand what it means to be creative, then you can't really appreciate it. I think sometimes people have this definition of creativity as if you have to be very artsy. And it's this very kind of nebulous thing over there that only certain people can take hold of. And if I don't fall into that category, then that shouldn't matter to me. And I feel like there's a misunderstanding of what it actually is, and so people don't know how to really apply it to life in general, and they don't see the creativity within themselves because they don't understand what it actually means.
Oh, that's a really good point. And that actually very, yeah, absolutely true.
Some of our other guests, what are some of your thoughts on this topic?
If I may just jump in again about the responsibility question, I think that anyone with a talent and a gift, they're given that gift for a reason. It's to, you know, it's to act on that gift, and it's to use that gift for the betterment of themselves and other people. So I think, yes, poets have a gift, and that's why it's their responsibility to use it for the betterment of other people, for the betterment of society. So I think that, and I don't think it's just poets, but I think, yes, in that respect, yes, poets do have that responsibility, because poets do have the ability to think in a certain way and to put things and phrase things in a certain way that engages people so that they can better understand and better appreciate those things. But I think that applies to a lot of other different areas as well.
That's a very, very, very deep point. And I would just, and I think that if you don't use this quality, if you're just a smart person and you can, and you're good at looking at the world, if you don't use it, as you say, to pay it forward, as they say, what happens? You lose it. And in fact, often what happens is you become bitter because you're so good at looking at the world, and you, but you recognize that you're not doing something about it. So something inside of you makes you more bitter, and kind of you kind of go downhill when you don't do that. It's kind of funny because it is a
hold that thought.
There is free will. Huh? Sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. Hold that thought. We'll take just a little short break and come back with some more poetry and some more thoughts. Hold on. Welcome back. This is Michael Ingram again with the Power of Poetics. If you'd like to call in, we still have some time to take new callers. The number is 646-716-8754. Again, that's 646-716-8754. Throughout the course of tonight, we've talked about poetry being the last frontier in terms of its role in protest, and I want to give a little plug for next week. We're going to move into the theme of love, and just a little plug, because one of the, maybe two of the people online will play a big role in what we plan to do next month. The theme for the month will be, Let's Get It On, the role of life, love, and happiness through poetry. So Let's Get It On, the role of life, love, and happiness through poetry. And we'll have a number of guest poets and guest authors. Hopefully Mr. Malone will be one of those guest poets, and we also have an author on the line, Miss Sophia Stewart, and she'll be here to share works from her book. And Sophia, what's the title of your book?
Poems of Love and Life from a Simple Black Girl.
All right, a perfect title, So again, she will be with us at the end of the month.
So again, as we continue this discussion tonight, who'd like to share another poem?
I can share something from Keats if nobody else has one of theirs. Somebody has one of their poems they want to share?
So Keats away.
Okay. This is a sonnet by Keats titled, When I Have Fears That I May Cease to Be. When I have fears that I may cease to be, before my pen has gleaned my teeming brain, before high-piled books and charactery hold like rich garner the full ripened grain, when I behold upon the night star's face huge cloudy symbols of high romance and think that I may never live to trace their shadows with the magic hand of chance. And when I feel, fair creature of an hour, that I shall never look upon thee more, never have relish in the fiery power of unreflecting love, then on the shore of the wide world I stand alone and think till love and fame to nothingness do sink.
Right. Why is that a favorite work?
That's one of my favorites because it's really, Keats is one of these people that is one of the most generous poets that you will ever find. He, if you read his letters, he kind of walks you through what he's thinking. But it's clear to me in this that he's wrestling as a young man. He dies when he's 26. As a young man who becomes one of the best poets around, he's wrestling with how to know himself, as a couple of our speakers today on today's show mentioned. He's showing, not only is he exploring himself, but he's reporting back to us what he did, how he thought about this. He's, as a poet, he values his work. He says, man, I hope I don't die before I'm able to communicate all these wonderful things and my passions. You know, will I, what about all these earthly things that I want to do? Some of which are profoundly noble, whether it's love or poetry. So, okay, but he says, when I have all these fears and insecurities, standing in the very end, he shows you him standing and reflecting on the bigger purpose, the bigger mission, what it all means. We can all picture ourselves sitting in, watching our own funeral. What was that all about? And he tells you from this perspective, these things in this greater scope just kind of sink into this vast eternal, you know, sea. But he does it in a very subtle and powerful way. And one of those things I keep going back to, just because I know he's really got this, and he's got it in other works as well.
All right. You know, there's a piece that I have, and I think Gary heard it some time ago when it was just he and I on there. Well, actually, we're running out of time. But I'm going to recite this piece anyway because I think it fits in terms of someone's epitaph when they're gone, in terms of what you'd like people to remember about them. And it's called... When I die, paint my portrait in the sky. When I die, would someone please paint my portrait in the sky? Paint it high up so that all eternity can see what kind of man I thought I could be. So when I die, would somebody please paint my portrait in the sky? Let the world know that I was here. A black man, now I'm gone. Far and not so near. So when I die, would somebody please paint my portrait in the sky? Let all the world know that I was here, now I'm gone. And that I won't be back no more.
Pretty great.
Because I think that's one of the most important things is being able to leave a legacy. And the question is, as we conclude tonight, is what legacy would we like to leave? You know? So if poetry truly is the last frontier, and I think as we've all shared and heard that, for me, I'm thinking that the legacy is the fact that we're able to lift our voices and to, as I've said so many different times in the past, being able to metaphorically scream and just get it out of your system through self-expression, to not hold that stuff inside, to let it go, to let it reach the wind, to let it blow, to let it sail, to let it soar, to let it do whatever it needs to do so that at least it's not contained inside you, boiling and churning and causing difficulty and strife to get rid of it. Maybe we can't change the planet. Maybe we can change the planet, I don't know. But what I do know is that through the power of poetry, if it is the last frontier, it gives us an opportunity to stand up and speak our truth and share our story. People don't need to believe it. They don't need to believe it. But it is your truth. That's why I always make the statement, there are no rights or wrongs when it comes to poetry. That's you. That's your way of being. Gary, that's your way of being through the beautiful work that you share. Sophia, that's your way of being. Anastasia, that's your way of being. Alex, that's your way of being. I can't negate your way of being. I just can't. No one can. So everyone, we've reached that hour. I wish we had more time. But it's time for us to say goodnight. I want to thank our guest for appearing with us tonight, and hopefully you come back next week. This is The Power of Poetics, the DC Poetry Project's Open Mic Live Call-In Show, every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I say thank you and good night.
Thank you.
And let poetry
ring. Thank you for everything.
Right.
Yeah, thank you, too. And good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night. Thank you.